This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. You know, guys, I know I'm back in studio after having COVID here, but did you have to scrub me down like Bruce Willis in 12 Monkeys, man? Dude. What was with the dude with the long brush? Okay.
Yeah, we built a car wash while you were gone just for you.
Because
we knew we were going to have to decontaminate you and then decontaminate you again because that's just the nature of what we're dealing with.
First of all, nice job on all the nooks and crannies, FYI. I actually talked to my doctor today. I have got now the best immunity, but I want to make sure I'm very clear about something. They come out with a booster shot for Omicron. I'm getting it. You think I'm going anywhere without my N95 mask? You're crazy. I care about not only myself, my family, my coworkers. Yeah, I know that one's hard to believe, but it's true. My coworkers and society as a whole, because I don't want anyone sick. I don't want anyone dead. I don't want anyone bankrupt for the next 10 years with medical debt. So I'm back. Good to be back here. Good to see no one else here is sick, that was my biggest concern, I have to tell you the truth. And we are going to begin this once again. Democrat of the day. We are bringing it back for 2022. Like past years, our first Democrat of the day heads the DFL here in the state of Minnesota. Ken Martin is kind enough to join us to talk about the upcoming 2022 election cycle. Hey, Ken, how are you?
I'm doing great, Matt. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you, my friend. We haven't chatted in a few months. It's nice to hear your voice once again. I got to start off with something, though, that was carried over from last year. I've got to imagine the DFL has got some plans here. Your former counterpart on the Minnesota GOP, Jennifer Carnahan, well, let's just say her tenure ended fairly spectacularly, and there's obviously a lot of questions about what the heck was going on within the Minnesota GOP. They even gave her a farewell bonus at the end as they headed out. I imagine, just as the Minnesota GOP has a tendency of railing against any perceived slight they pick up from the DFL. I'm guessing the DFL's got some plans as far as messaging in regards to the nightmare implosion that was the Minnesota GOP in 2021.
Well, let me just start by saying I'm sure when I leave, I won't be getting a huge bonus or a severance package. I'm sure I'll get a big kick in the rear and don't let the door hit you on the way out. but let me say this. Look, that's in the past. I mean, we're obviously focused right now with just around 300 days left until this election. We're really focused on November 8th, and, it doesn't do us a lot of good to focus on what happened over the last few years under Chairwoman Carnahan. They have a new chair now, but I will say the new chair is really no different than the old chair in some ways, perpetuating a lot of the same conspiracy theory and misinformation. I was at a recent debate with David Hand, the new chairman of the Republican Party, and just last week. And of course, not unlike Jennifer Carnahan, he continues to peddle in COVID conspiracy as well as the big lie. So again, in some ways, while it may be a new chair, it's a lot of the same old garbage from the Republican Party, both in this state and around the country.
Let's focus on that. I mean, there's obviously, you want low-hanging fruit as far as being able to go after Republicans. We'll just start with their lunacy with the anti-vaccination. Most of them have video on their own social media sites, which is almost ready for a DFL ad to point out the fact that this is in a fringe mentality. And I know a lot of them, when they get to the general election, are going to say, where did you ever get the idea I was against vaccines? Because the vast majority of Minnesotans are vaccinated, believe in vaccines, believe in common sense health care. Talk a little bit about that, because, I mean, it's sometimes I think we kind of overanalyze things and we look for a more complicated issue. They're literally putting the ball in the tee for the DFL in regards to vaccines.
Well, again, that's absolutely right. All of their leading candidates for governor have, you know, participated in spreading misinformation about COVID-19. Some of them still claim that it's a hoax. All of them do not support mask mandates in any way, shape, or form, or vaccines. And generally, you have two doctors who are completely ignoring science and fact here, in Dr. Scott Jensen and Dr. Shaw. All of their leading candidates have gone on the record spreading some sort of misinformation and conspiracy around COVID. And that tells you everything you need to know about the state of the Republican Party, where you have leading candidates for governor, basically, who are trading in some of the worst conspiracy that that exists out there right now. You know, you need responsible leaders who are actually going to listen to their advisors, to science and facts, and take public health officials at their word and plan for, you know, cases like this. And, you know, thank God we have Governor Walz in there and President Biden at the top in our country, people who are actually going to, you know, listen to folks and do the responsible thing. You know, God help us if one of these jokers on the Republican side gets elected to office, because, you know, again, they're not listening to the folks they should be. They're trading in some of the worst conspiracy we know, and we deserve better than that.
You know, back in 2018, the Democrats in the DFL had a pretty good successful, you know, run pointing out the fact that we are the party of health care. We want more expansive health care, more options for people, less expensive. We don't want people necessarily in debt. And there was a discussion on how that's going to happen, but pretty much every Democrat was for better health care. Things kind of to a point, I know that that was part of the message in 2020, but I think the pandemic kind of overwhelmed it. I mean, as they're out there trying to scream about ivermectin and bleach injections, the reality is they, once again, they have, on a base issue on health care, they have left the door wide open to control that message all the way through the 2022 election cycle.
Well, there's no doubt about it. And let me just say it this way. Look, under Donald Trump and the Republicans, they did nothing to really lead us out of COVID in any way, shape, or form. They did not take the pandemic seriously. Started to it in many ways, it was already too late. And President Biden and Democrats come into office. I mean, think about this. In 1 year, the president set up a historic vaccination program that has resulted in more than 200 million Americans that are fully vaccinated this year. Almost 75% of all adults now are vaccinated, thanks to President Biden and Democrats who actually science and fact, and have taken this pandemic seriously from day one in office. That's the difference between Democrats and Republicans. We listen to science, we believe the facts, and we're going to lead responsibly to keep people safe and make sure that our economy doesn't tank. And, you know, those are the things, I think, at the end of the day that differentiate our parties here. In this modern time right now, the Republicans would rather throw red meat to Trumpers and these anti-vaxxer conspiracy theorists than actually lead and do what's right by people.
Well, and let's bring up then the big lie. And as much as this is lunacy on the right, the reality is they just had a debate between the leading GOP candidates for Minnesota governor and asked them all point blank who won in 2020. And they, none of them could really just say, oh, well, Joe Biden won. I mean, I think the best they got about to was, well, Joe Biden was declared the winner. And that's all they can say, because the people that choose the GOP candidate are that lunatic QAnon fringe. They don't want to upset them. But the reality is the fact that they still, that no one in the Republican Party, without being ostracized from the party, can come on out and just say, wow, Joe Biden got more votes and won the election.
And, you know, it's not a partisan issue. It shouldn't be a partisan issue, to be honest with you, Matt. You know, our democracy deserves both parties speaking very loudly on this. Of course, one is the Democratic Party nationally, and here in Minnesota, the DFL, who's standing up not only for voting rights, but making sure that, you know, we understand that when you participate in essentially eroding people's confidence in elections, as the Republicans continue to do, despite, by the way, no proof of massive voter fraud.
Exactly.
40-plus cases that were decided against Republicans around the country. The fraud in Arizona, which actually ended up showing that Joe Biden won the state even more decisively. Despite repeated attempts by the Republicans to try to create this narrative that somehow the election in 2020 was stolen, there's no proof that would suggest that that's the case. And I would welcome them continuing to go down this road, because each time they do this, it just continues to show that that not only do they not have the goods, they live on some sort of fantasy island here, believing what they want to believe. Well, most Americans and most Minnesotans certainly believe that this election was legitimate. Now, look, I think there's a danger to democracy, and that's the piece that's really disheartening here. You know, we used to live in a society here in this country, in our Republican democracy, where the transfer of power and free and fair elections are paramount, and both parties supported our democracy. Now you have one party who engages in this willful misinformation campaign, trying to throw red meat to their base at the expense of the long-term expense of the health of our democracy, and I would even say the short-term demise of our democracy will be when people don't have confidence, because people have completely destroyed it, i.e. the Republican Party. So we need to do a better job. People in both parties, frankly, people who care about our democracy, people who care about giving people the right to vote, need to do a better job in standing up and defending our democracy, not through the lens of party, not through the lens of the Democratic Party or the Republican Party or others, but through the lens of people who care about our democracy and the fact that the democracy gives power to the people to make these decisions. No one wants to go backwards here, but the Republican Party certainly is doing everything they can to move us backwards in this country.
Ken Martin joining us, the head of the DFL here in the state of Minnesota. Ken, let's talk about the Republicans and their plan of attack. They definitely are going to go after crime. Now, obviously, and I'll be very blunt, I have been out in rural Minnesota. Their narrative is generally it's got a racist slant to it. Talk about black people in the city, and that's kind of how they do talk about it a lot. But we have had some fairly, visible carjackings and stuff going out there. And a lot of people, including myself, asking the question, how are kids who are on their fourth or fifth carjacking not getting, tried in a little bit more of a serious manner? The DFL can take a lot of wind out of the sails of the Republicans in regards to this by putting forward a crime bill. Is that something the DFL is currently working on over in St. Paul?
Well, absolutely. Absolutely, and Representative Cedric Frazier had a wonderful op-ed the other day talking about the bill that he's going to be introduced, which is a balanced approach to what we're seeing in our communities right now. And let's be honest about this. There has been a pretty sharp increase in crime, and we have to get our hands around it, and it's not an either-or approach. We do need to focus on criminal justice reform and on police reform and accountability. All those things matter, but they can't be at the expense of also being tough on crime. Look, we believe, our party believes in second chances for sure, but, third, fourth, fifth, sixth chances, I don't think there's any sort of tolerance for that in our community. And I will tell you that if you look at Representative Frazier's bill, which is both looking at ways we can address some of the systemic issues in our criminal justice system, while at the same time making sure that we're investing in law enforcement, in policing throughout our state, making sure they have the resources to have full police forces. Many communities, many municipalities right now are understaffed for a variety of reasons, not to mention funding. Two, we need to invest in more foot patrols, particularly in high crime areas, to make sure that we have deterrence on the ground there. Three, we need to make sure that we are investing in community crime prevention programs, which have proven time after time again, when you invest in those types of programs, they're making a difference in those communities. We need to take crime seriously, and we can't just focus on the criminal justice reform side of it. Yes, some of it's systemic, but there is a piece of it that is the here and now, and we have to acknowledge as DFLers that we have a problem in this state that we all collectively, Democrats and Republicans, have to get our hands around. And let me say that piece, because because it's easy for the Republicans to throw grenades here and say that this is the DFL's fault, completely untrue, obviously. But I would ask the Republicans, what ideas have they put forward in the last 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, or longer to actually address any of this in terms of public safety? They haven't. And you know, it's easy, again, to criticize. But what we found from the Republican Party is they really lack any ideas on how to deal with these critical issues facing our state and country right now. And when pressed, they just go back to their sort of racist dog whistles and the same BS that they're spreading. They lack any substantive policy prescription to address this. I would say look at the DFLers who are bringing real proposals forward to both get our hands around crime and also at the same time, you know, reform a criminal justice system that needs reforming.
Well, and it also should be noted, and by the way, this is going to back up your point about the racist element of this. Meth is an epidemic in rural Minnesota. Drunken driving is an epidemic in rural Minnesota. When was the last time you heard any Republican talk about those two issues? And so if they were honestly going to care about crime, wouldn't they care about crime in their districts as opposed to just screaming about Minneapolis and North Minneapolis and black man with a gun? And that's what they scream. And that's because this is not about actually solving crime issues. It's basically about trying to rile up their base with racist rhetoric, something we've seen the Republican Party turn to over the last 6 years.
Well, that's exactly right. And I will say, Matt, crime's increasing everywhere. It's just a complete misnomer to suggest that it's only increased in Minneapolis or St. Paul. It's increased in the suburbs. It's increased in greater Minnesota, as you suggested. There's a lot of reasons for that. Some of it's pandemic related. Others, you know, are economic related, socioeconomic. There's a lot of different reasons for this. But to suggest that this is only happening in Minneapolis and St. Paul is incorrect. It's not incorrect to say that we collectively need to get our hands around this and we all need to take this more seriously. And I think that goes for Republicans as much as it goes for DFLers. You know, one of the things that they don't talk about is the fact that there's been a huge increase in violent crime. And one of the reasons there's been a huge increase in violent crime is because of the just sort of readily available guns that are on the streets right now that we see in record numbers. If we really want to get our hands around violent crimes, we also need to figure out how we keep guns off the streets of people who shouldn't have them, yet Republicans don't want to have that debate at all. And again, it shows you that they don't take these issues very seriously. This is all about appealing to their base and not having a real debate about how we actually solve for these issues that are facing the state right now.
Ken, two more quick questions for you. First of all, we just saw in Virginia, you had the governor, the new Republican governor over there, who, once again, what's the dog and pony show they do, the tap dancing they do? I'm really a moderate. I'm really going to work with the other side. First day in office, puts out a far right agenda, lets the you know, drops the facade, drops the myth, becomes the far right tool that he has always been, and basically says, I'm the governor now. What are you going to do about it? The reality is we need to keep hitting on that issue, is that the Republicans, as much, especially when they get to the general election, and they're going to be in there and they're going to be arguing about, oh, I'm not really believing that Trump won. I'm not really believing vaccines are bad. The reality is we need to keep reminding people that the minute they get into office, they can put on I'm a moderate, you know, shine as much as possible. They are far right extremists and they're pushing an agenda, most of which does not come from the state of Minnesota, but from these conservative think tanks around the country.
Well, look, I mean, I said this in 2016 to people who were considering voting for Donald Trump, or from even Democrats who were considering not voting for Hillary Clinton, right? And then look at the situation we're now in after three Trump appointees to the court. One of the things one of the rights that we all have sort of taken for granted is about to be overturned with Roe v. Wade in this country. And so if we think that any right is perpetually guaranteed or that elections don't matter, you don't have to go back much further than the 2016 election to think about how every election has a consequence. There is a choice. There are two sides here. It's not as if those sides are even close on the issues. We're not. And maybe that's part of the problem in this country, is how polarized politics are. But there is a clear choice. When you support a Republican, you are risking the fact that they are going to come in and completely erode many of the rights that you and your neighbors and others take for granted. You know, they're going to come for reproductive States. Next, they'll come for marriage equality. Then they'll go for environmental protections. They have already come after voting rights, and they'll certainly go after civil rights next and just down the list. So, you know, look, elections have consequences. I want to encourage everyone who listens to this show to remember that. There is a clear choice between the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, and you don't have to look much further than what they're doing around this country right now.
Last thing here, it's obviously we're going to be talking with a lot of Democrats over the next few months. The reality, I do want to make sure I send people to the mothership, as I might say, DFL.org, because you guys have a lot. You know, obviously, not only do you list all the candidates that are running, you have, you know, press information, you know, events that you have coming up here. There's a lot of great information people can go to get by just going over to the DFL website, right?
Well, absolutely. DFL.org. You can sign up to attend your precinct caucuses there. Sign up to get involved in our campaigns. Obviously, with redistricting coming up, there's going to be a lot of changes. There's a lot of uncertainty right now about what all these races will look like. But if you're interested in making a difference, rolling up your sleeves and getting on the doors and talking to voters over the phone, we've got opportunities for you. This is a critical election, probably one of the most critical we've seen in many years. And if you care about the future of Minnesota and our country, I'd really encourage you to visit that website, sign up to volunteer, help the DFL and our candidates win in November.
Ken Martin, the head of the DFL, Democrat of the day for your Tuesday. Ken, an absolute privilege chatting with you. Thank you very much for the time. We will talk to you again, hopefully before too long.
Thanks, Matt. Take care.
Take care. Ken Martin, kind enough to spend some time with us. Let's spotlight that one for sure. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Thank you very much to Ken Martin for joining us. You know, I there are two things I want to bring up here. And the first one is... Ken, I know Democrats are nice and all, but dude, you've been given a gift. That whole implosion of the GOP by Jennifer Carnahan and the clown car that we were shown, the truly ugly behavior that was going on with people who were working within the halls of the GOP. Dear Lord. That is something the GOP cannot defend. They can't. There is no way in the planet they can defend it. So if you don't bring it up, if you don't go on the attack, that is the lowest of low-hanging fruit that you're kind of leaving on the tree there. I mean, you should have a full ad campaign talking about the mismanagement, the allegations, the crimes, holy God, the people? And you should be running that statewide. You know, if this was a Republican, if this was a Democratic scandal and the Republicans were there, do not think for one second that they would be out there. This would be the linchpin of their entire 2022 campaign. So you saying what's happened in the past, you're just doing what the GOP wants you to. And they can't, there is nothing they can say. There is nothing they can say. Making them squirm for a year. Delicious. And you'll win with that. Sometimes I do get frustrated because it's like, we don't want to be look like the mean guys. No, I mean, you need to crotch punch these guys into freaking submission. Drop them like flies. And in this one, dear Lord, they're spreading their legs wide for the crotch punch on that one. Drop them. Seriously. Don't just skip past that. That is an insanely embarrassing chapter for the GOP. They can't defend. And so the only way they basically can win on that issue is if the DFL doesn't bring it up. The other thing is, and I think we need to remind people, back in 2016, Ken was absolutely right. There were not only a lot of people who were, you know, as he begged people not to vote for Trump, but Democrats out there who said, I'm proudly not voting for Hillary Clinton. And look at the freaking mess we have. An attempted overthrow of the government. Immense graft of the government. My God, how much grifting can one family do? A Supreme Court which will take a generation for us to get back unless we expand it. That is already, and he's not lying. Roe v. Wade is gone. Because a lot of people, I'm proudly sitting out 2016. Yeah, good. Good going. Nicely done. Nah, you cannot sit out elections. And hey, I'll be the first one to say, yeah, it's frustrating that a lot of times we have two choices. It is. It's really frustrating. But the reality is we got two choices. One, the DFL, the Democrats, they're the good choice. The Republicans are not. And you sitting out and saying, well, because my candidate is not there, I'm not going to vote. Oh, God, please. Then you can't wash your hands of the guilt that you need to have for what has happened. You can't. We can all, I'll quickly will point to a lot of the Trump voters as the problem here. I have no problem doing that. But I'm not going to sit back here and wash my hand, you know, the many Democrats who basically said, I'm not going to vote for Hillary and probably gotcha. And then all of a sudden, well, I didn't mean for that to happen. Well, what did you think was going to happen? As a matter of fact, there was a story coming up here in a little bit I'll get to. Where, once again, Democrats just have this, like, well, we just don't think the worst is going to happen. Come on. You guys have got to understand that if you leave the door open a slight bit for the far right extremists, they will kick that door open. So, you can't sit them out. You can't. You just can't. And once again, I'll repeat what I have said. If every person who is listening to me right now, every Democrat in the state, registers 5 people to vote, get them registered, let them find out where their polling place is going to be, make sure on election day they get to the polling place and they get their vote cast. If you do that, the Democrats are going to win every race by a mile. They'll hold the House. They'll pick up the Senate easily. And they'll probably pick up 2 or 3 of the Republican House seats. U.S. House seats. Definitely 1, definitely 8. For sure. So, I mean, it's up to you. I mean, that's how you have to work. And yeah, that's work. And yeah, that's saying, you know, calling your friends. Call all your friends. Or simply this, go up on social media and ask, hey, does anyone out there, are they not registered to vote? And take, you know, once you get to 5, well, say, I'm going to help you do this because we need a vote. Get your 5, get them registered, help them out. Make sure they vote come election day in November. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll stay on the politics side when we come on back. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Can I get some nasty bass? AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Thanks to Ken Martin for joining us this hour. And once again, let me go through once again the Democrat of the day. We basically are going to have on as many Minnesota House candidates, Minnesota Senate candidates, the U.S. House candidates, and the state office candidates. We'll have as many of them on as we possibly can to talk about their campaigns. Yeah, we call it Democrat of the day, but I've always said I'll have a Republican of the day. That is not something that I'm, you know, I'll wait for the general election because I'm not just going to start interviewing Republicans. I'll wait till your general election. Once you get through your primary, you know, if you want to come on, fine. Let me give you an example of what you're going to experience. One, who won the election in 2020? And if you say, well, of course, Joe Biden did. So, well, then why are you so tolerant of your party basically insisting that Trump won? Then I'm going to ask you, do you think vaccines for COVID are a good thing? And you're, oh, I've never been against vaccine. I just do it for choice. I said, well, why should someone whose choice has, which has nothing to do with religion, it's just their personal choice, be allowed to be a protected class and jeopardize the health and safety of every one of their coworkers? You're more than welcome. Let's check those phone lines there, Patrick. How many calls from the Republicans have we gotten? So are the phone lines lit up with Republicans wanting to be Republican of the day?
I can't even keep up with it.
Oh, it's wow. I understand Republicans, they think, well, just have me on, I'll just yell my way. We'll pot you down, dude. I'm not going to allow you to come on screaming like a freaking banshee. You come on my show, you answer my questions. Hey, I'll even at the end of it let you make your little spiel, send people to your website. That's fine. But don't think for one second I'm going to allow you to tell me what questions to ask you. I do my own questions. And trust me, we always have a few Republicans who every time we do this, who out there say, they got the Democrat of the day, but they won't let a Republican on the air. No, dude, you're just a coward. You don't want to do it. Don't come on. As a matter of fact, they had one guy, it was like 5 years, 6 years ago, who did that. And I called up his campaign and said, I heard that you basically said you don't think you can get on the air. If you want to be the Republican of the day, the coward never called me back. Never one. Big mouth. When I said, no, come on in. Come on down. The water's fine. I'll even put on trunks for you. Au natural, of course, in the matte bathing grotto. Okay, fine. You want me in something a little more appropriate? I can do that. As long as you come on in, you're more than welcome to. I have no problem. I would love whoever the GOP gubernatorial candidate is, love to have them be Republican of the day on my show. Oh gosh. Slightly aroused. All right, 952-946-6205. I know. I'm a child. I watched too much Deadpool while I was on my COVID watch. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I've got bad news for all of us. All of us here, Patrick, because there's a retirement that stings. Another Republican has decided not to run for office again. That would be Bill Ingebrigtsen. Yes, that Bill Ingebrigtsen, our fishing update guy. The Republican from Alexandria says 2022 will be his final year in the state Senate. Now, I want to remind everyone, this guy tried his hardest for some reason to kill clean cars, you know, green cars. He did not want to have electric cars sold in the state of Minnesota. And even though it had nothing to do with the DNR, the Park and Recs Board and all that stuff, the Environmental Committee, he basically vowed that he won't pass an environmental bill. Shut down the state parks across the state, along with any other part of that agency, until they got rid of green cars. And boy, oh boy, yeah. And then he ran off to Alaska for a fishing adventure. A fishing adventure. And that's what he called leadership. Well, apparently, that clown car, first elected to the Senate in 2006, after 34 years in the Douglas County Sheriff's Office. I think we should have looked into the Sheriff's Office. I'm going to get there. There's some questions there. Ingebrigtsen is the Committee of the Environmental and Natural Resources Finance Committee, Vice Chair of the Finance Committee. He's the latest of a quickly growing line of state lawmakers opting to not seek re-election. You know, it's the thing which I find to be amazing about him is that if Ingebrigtsen is feeling like the water in the Republican tank is getting too extreme, he's grateful to work in many ways with the legislators. Minnesotans' issues important to our state. As I look forward to retirement, I must stop and thank my family for their years of support. Without them, I could not have done this. Well, of course, how about those airlines that get you up to Alaska for those fishing trips? Thank you. As I begin my next phase, is he molting? Is he going to, like, weave a cocoon? And oh, never mind. As he starts his next phase, I'll continue to advocate for the people of Alexandria, greater Minnesota, as well as our law enforcement officers, outdoor enthusiasts, and sportsmen. Dude, you are going to shut down all the parks because they wouldn't stop green energy cars. Okay. I want to thank the people of West Central Minnesota for putting their trust in me all these years. You had an R next to your name. Trust had nothing to do with it. You've just created a bunch of lemmings that only vote for Republicans because that's, you know, you've brainwashed a lot of them into doing so. So I wouldn't call that a victory lap, sir. Mike is in Columbia Heights. Let's get Mike on in here. Welcome on in. Thanks for holding, Mike.
Hi, Matt. I'm just trying to get a perception test here, a perception viewpoint. 2 weeks ago, Chuck Todd did an expose of Trump and all his foibles and all his failures. And then the following Monday, it seemed to me like all of a sudden the U.S. press came out against Joe Biden. And I did not hear anything good said about Joe Biden for that week and next week or the following week. And this last Sunday, it was just pure propaganda from Chuck Todd and from all the other Sunday shows. News shows, all they did was point up the foibles of Joe Biden. They did not cover anything else.
Mike, let me explain exactly what's going on here. And the media is doing this because they don't want they want to keep this as close as possible. And their feeling is, and thanks for the phone call, Mike. I do appreciate it. The feeling is that if they basically don't go on out there and try to fix the playing field for the Republicans, not only will the media be labeled as liberal, which they're not now, they're to avoid being labeled liberal, they're knowingly being pro-Republican. That's kind of stupid. But on the same side of it, they want money. And they say, well, if we make sure all these races, Republicans will spend a lot of money with us. And so there is a very palatable narrative to basically say, boy, Democrats, you should be discouraged. Oh, God. Why are you even thinking of voting? They're doing this because even still today, 47% of people want Democrats in charge of the House and Senate. 45% want Republicans. In an off-year election, in a midterm election, that should be overwhelming for the Republicans. So they're trying their hardest to basically fix the playing field. Now, Ken Martin, the head of the Democrats nationally, Biden, there should be daily pep rallies for the Democrats. And what you should be doing is touting all the accomplishments like that great infrastructure bill, which Republicans are now trying to take claim credit for. But tout the accomplishments. And when it comes to stuff that's not getting done, say, hey, I need more Democrats in the House and the Senate. We'll get more stuff done. It's that simple. But don't, you know, you can see what the narrative is. The narrative is clearly to basically badmouth Biden to try to keep this election close, to try to appease. And the Republicans, I'll tell you what, Republicans are out there in force trying to drive that narrative. Out in force trying to drive that narrative. And the media is very quick. Take a look at the Star Tribune and that god-awful editorial they ran on Saturday, or Sunday rather, where they have the highest. I mean, that was just an amazingly ignorant editorial, and they ran it, and then they act as if Monday, when they had the lowest circulation of the entire week, that them allowing people to put counterpoint is fair and balanced. Sure, there's like 100,000, 200,000 more readers of the paper on Sunday than there on Monday, but fair and balanced. Please, go on out there. Don't allow the media to basically dictate to you that Democrats are doomed, Democrats are failing, Democrats don't vote. No, they're driving a narrative. I'm proud of Joe Biden. I'm proud of what Joe Biden has done. I'm proud of what a lot of them, the Democrats, have done as well. There's a lot to be proud of, and we could do more if we had more people in the House and the Senate. Well, it's time to deliver. 952-946-6205. I do want to bring up this one other last thing here before going to break. I believe this was in the Reformer. Donald Trump won Crow Wing County by nearly 30 points in 2020. So did Republican congressional candidate Jason Lewis in the failed bid against Tina Smith, U.S. Representative Pete Stauber in his race as well. Republicans also prevailed in races for the House and the Senate. But despite Republicans showing strong and the fact that the county officials conducted pre-election equipment tests and post-election reviews, a group of pro-Trump residents have demanded a full forensic audit of the county's election results. Now, we've talked about this before. Residents cite their own intuition and conspiracy theories rather than facts to make their case. My heart is telling me there's something drastically wrong with this erection. Election. I was about to say Rick Fell. Well, I don't know if Rick Felt's ever said that, but he was talking about the election here. He's an Army veteran living in the county. Rick, I'm an Army veteran too. You're nuts, dude, if you're telling me your heart is saying there is something wrong with this election. The activists succeeded this month, more than a year after the election, in getting Crow and Now, once again, I want to remind everyone, Republicans basically won this county by 70%. There were 70% they got. I mean, they didn't win by that margin, but they got 70% of the vote in the county. Overwhelming. And they still want an audit. This is the best part of this entire story. The Secretary of State, Steve Simon. Now, the activists succeeded this month. They got the Crow Wing County Board to ask the state for a forensic audit of the 2020 election, although the board stated it stands by the election process. Secretary of State Steve Simon, on repeal, after receiving this request, he says he has no idea what a full forensic audit means and that there's no reason to second guess the outcome of the 2020 election. So they've asked him to do something which there is no process to do. There's not like, oh, let's open up the guidebook here because we have to do a full forensic audit. Let's open up the guidebook here and see what it, oh, here's what we need to do. No, there is no process. They've asked him to do something, you know, the Steve Simon jamboree. And so he's sitting here saying, what jamboree? What am I supposed to do here? You've asked him to do something that there is no process for in the state books to do it. Guys are idiots. These guys on the right are just idiots. And once again, they have no problem wasting state taxpayer dollars. This is just stupid. But here we are.
Yeah, I think Trump won every vote in the county.
Did he? Or are you just dumb? Well, I think we all know that. 952-946-6205. He has no idea. What's a full forensic audit? I don't know. We'll take a break. Come on back. I promise to mispronounce a few more words before the end of the hour. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. My heart is telling me that there is something drastically wrong. Never mind. 952-946-6205. I can't do a dramatic reading of that. It's just wrong. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here. I one last thing here before we get into the top of the hour. And by the way, a humdinger of an interview coming up here with Brett. He's got Max Nesterek from the Minnesota Reformer today. He's got to talk about the money going to the hospitals and Amy Klobuchar going to the Ukraine. That's coming up here in the 5 o'clock hour here. Back then, I talked about this idea, this notion that you can trust Republicans to not take advantage of a door being left open. And I said, you're fools. They will kick that door open every time. We have seen in this country a war on public education. And in some places, it's been absolutely a disaster for public education, whether it's getting rid of all standards for teachers, paying them basically $25,000 a year to teach a form test, shoveling as much public taxpayer dollars out of the public school system into the hands of private businesses, whether that's religious schools or private schools or charter schools that don't get the same results that the public schools do. And it's been an absolute nightmare. And that's the whole goal, is that the Republicans look at the money for public schools and they say, how do we get that money out of the public coffers and into the pockets of private donors? That's what they do. And you're a fool to think that if you pass a constitutional amendment that leaves that door open for them to do that here in Minnesota, that they won't do the same thing. Which brings up a very good article, and I don't have time to get into the whole article. But it's an article in MinnPost about the Page Amendment. This is the amendment to the Constitution that he wants to put in there. And the argument is that he wants to you know, go on out there and, you know, make it to where there's, you know, there's a constitutional page amendment that says that there's going to be a, where's the exact language here? The exact language, Minnesota education achievement gaps across the race and social establishment have persisted for decades. The study concluded the amendment was first introduced in 2020 in the initial push to get on the ballot, which requires a majority vote in both the House and the Senate, was derailed by the COVID-19 pandemic. And so basically it's going to be a constitutional amendment where it says that make it a paramount duty of the state provide children with a quality public education. But there is some verbiage in here that's being thrown around that kind of leaves the door open to possibly go out there and, you know, ship this money to public school vouchers, private school vouchers, hand money basically to, you know, a handful of people that, you know, their goal is to wipe out public education. And State Representative Hoden Hassan, she's gone out there, and she and Justice Page are big champions of this bill. And as a matter of fact, one of the great parts about this story is, and this is, you don't see this that often, this is an issue where all the politicians are all over the place. There are Republicans and liberal Democrats who are for this. There are Republicans and liberal Democrats who are against this. It doesn't seem to be clear where this is going. She supports many members of the legislature, people of color and indigenous caucus, comes to a personal experience from public schools and close view of the disparities. I'm a firm believer in public education. I'm a product of public education, and my children are public a product of public education. She supports fully funding public schools so teachers can concentrate on teaching instead of budgets. But even when we fully fund education today, we're still going to run into a systemic barriers. Not going to deny it. But passing a bill that basically opens up to see the entire budgets get gutted by vouchers and stuff is not a way to go. She disagrees with the notion the amendment is a backdoor way to privatize education, harm teachers' unions. That's what Republicans have been doing across the country. If you don't see that cab coming down the street, I can't help you, but that's a bad idea. Hour two is up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Matt, Patrick here. You know, Patrick, it's nice to go today. As a matter of fact, can I just say, this is kind of my favorite kind of winter day. And what I mean is this, a lot of things are melting. It was 42 degrees out there. Now, I'm not saying I like the fact that it's clearly climate change and this is a problem. What I like is the fact that we got a warm enough day to where we melted off all the snow on the driveways and on the roads, right? And now it's going to get cold. And we're not supposed to, my last time I checked, we're not supposed to get any snow until like Sunday. So I get basically 5 days of driving around Minnesota in winter on pretty much dry roads. And I like that. I can't, it's rough, especially when they don't clear a road very well. That just gets annoying after a little bit. You just don't like going anywhere. It's going to get cold. It's going to be really, I mean, from 42 to right when I drove in at 4 o'clock, right before 4 o'clock, like 3:45 or so, I left and it was 42 degrees. Tomorrow morning, it's supposed to be like, you know, like 5 or so below. It's going to be brutal. It's a little bit of a drop in the temperature. And then the night, what is that, Thursday morning, is going to be like minus 13 or something like that. Bundle up. It's Minnesota. It's winter. I will say my arm is really hurting right now because I went to the doctor, got checked out, on a few things. I got my second shingles shot. Now, have you been vaccinated for the shingles?
I have not gotten that one yet in my life. No,
I'm going to highly recommend you get that. My sister-in-law, when we were down in August, we went down to South Carolina. As we're down there, she ended up having shingles. And I was under this false impression that, and I believe to get this, you have to have had the chicken pox, right? I believe it's chicken. You have to have chicken pox. And if you have chicken pox, then you can have this. I was under the impression we were vaccinated early on chicken pox, which the vaccine was out right about the time I was a kid. And I could have sworn my mom had said, oh, you're vaccinated. And so I didn't have anything to worry about. My mom, when we were down there, my mom said, oh no, you had chicken pox. I was like, I did. She goes, oh, yeah, every kid had it back then. You know, something that went through the crowd. And it was serious, and now we people get vaccinated for it, so it's not a problem. But my sister-in-law ended up having shingles while we were down there. Ah, it's not something I'm at all eager to have. So I'm now vaccinated. You got to get two shots on this. If you get the second shot, the second shot, you can get tired, maybe a little nauseous, something like this. I'm not doing this. My arm hurts because he javelined that sucker on into me. I'm not going to complain because there are a lot of people having to get a lot more shots than they used to with the COVID and stuff like that. So I imagine the fun and splendor of giving someone a shot is hard. You know, it's not there anymore. So it's like, all right, bang. Have you ever gotten a bad one? You ever gotten a bad shot?
Not really. The only experience I can really relate to was the first COVID shot hurt a lot more than the second one did.
Oh.
That hurt for like 4 days.
Did it? My first one was no problem. Then I had Helga the javelin thrower on the second one, and I mean, are you going through the bone? I don't think you have to go so deep there. You know, go with the thrust motion. Yikes! That one kind of hurt. I don't mind needles. I don't like needles though. I mean, are you one of those people when you get a shot, you're like, I'm going to watch you stick that in me. I am looking out the other side. Oh, look, a puppy picture. I'm going to look at the pup. Oh, okay, you got me.
No, I was watching her because I wanted to, kind of like just brace for the pain. And then it's like, oh, that's not that bad.
I'm watching you stick that in me. Hello. I've got some unfortunate news, some kind of sad news. My mom has a dachshund. That is ancient. I'm going to guess it's got to be 15 years old. I was looking for a picture of it. I'll tell you what. We got an interview coming up here. I'm going to find a picture of it with my kids when they were very young. And, you know, and this dog's been around. It's got to be 15. It's got to be 15 years, maybe even 16 years old. Well, its time is starting to end for him. It's getting tough out there. It's always hard. Having a dog, I mean, I've had Shelties, and Shelties go about 12 years. You know, the bigger the dog, generally the less the life cycle. I mean, I remember when we had Nancy Nelson was working here. She of course had Great Danes, and they are the biggest puppy dogs you've ever seen. They are very cute. I walked into one of the funniest stories ever. I walk into the studio. She had a Great Dane in the studio, and I had the show after her. And I open up the door, and I swear, staring me right in the face is a Great Dane. And I just look at the dog, and I just shut the door. And Nancy couldn't stop laughing. She thought it was hilarious. Great dogs. Unfortunately, a lot of them don't live very long, 5, 6, 7 years, because they're so big. Golden Retrievers usually get 8, 9, 10 years. Sometimes you get even longer, which is great, the Great Dog. Shelties, 12 years. Dachshunds, the small ones, can go a long time. A small dog can go a long time. And so it's always harder. Although this dog has always had an attitude. It's a dachshund. So it's always had an attitude. And I'll never forget, we were up north at the cabin, and we were watching my parents' dogs. And the dachshund decides to go scamper on down the shoreline. And my wife goes, you know, come here. The dachshund stops, turns, looks back at my wife, and just keeps going. My wife's like, come here. Like, I said, oh, I've heard that voice before. I'm not going to get in. I'll let you go get that dog. It's one of those dogs. It's we call it, whenever I call my mom, the dog barks because it wants to be let out. My mom says it doesn't bark like that until all of a sudden grandma's being, you know, it's talking to the grandkids and all of a sudden bark, bark. It's sad. We pets are such a wonderful thing. And you think about them in the sense being is that dog's been there longer. Old, that dog is older than my youngest child. And so it's kind of sad there. I don't know if my mom will get another dachshund. They are. I mean, have you ever had experience with dachshunds, Patrick?
I haven't, but I know they're the cute little wiener dogs.
Yeah, right? They're wiener schnitzels. Yes, they've got a flat coated one, which is like it looks like a golden retriever, only really short and really long. Pretty cute. but they have attitude. Oh, do they have? They are, I am the regal king of this castle. Don't you dare question my authority sort of dog there. So, yeah, it's not a breed I will ever get. I've kind of fallen in love with Shelties. Shelties are smart and they're very cute. And I love them. I really have been, I've been enjoying the Shelties. I grew up with Golden Retrievers for hunting. And then all of a sudden, for the life of me, I still don't understand whatever prompted my parents to get the first dachshund they ever had, which was Max, who's long gone off this planet. But yeah, they got them and then they fell in love with the dachshunds. And they've always had a Golden Retriever and a dachshund, which has led to some hilarious moments where the dachshund will nip the Golden Retriever. And all of a sudden I notice the couch is lifting up because the Golden Retriever is trying to get under the couch to go get the dachshund. They are, yeah. Yeah, they are. Yeah. I don't know. I all my best to my mom. I'm thinking about her right now. Hopefully, you know, I want to say, I hope the dog pulls it through, but the dog's 15. It's had its good run. And it's been very well loved and it's being very well taken care of. It's just sometimes time to go. And that's the hardest part. But as my dad said, when my first Sheltie passed away and I was just heartbroken, he said, you never trade a day. And he was right. Never trade a day. Even their worst day, it makes your day so much better. So 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. So we have... Of course, Tuesdays here, Brett gets a chance generally to talk to some of the journalists around town. We've talked a lot with the Minnesota Reformer guys. Max Nesterak is kind enough to join us from the Reformer. Brett and him are going to talk about a few different things, including the Minnesota money going to hospitals, which is definitely something that's needed right now with the Omicron variant going crazy. And then Klobuchar, I don't know if you caught this. You see that she went over to Ukraine. Man. Bring me back one of those bratwursts they got. Those Ukrainian bratwursts are delicious. You ever had those?
I haven't, but now I want one, too, that you mentioned.
Oh, man. We'll go up to Comanchex and go get it. They got them up there. Phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. She's out there, of course, as you and I talk about Ukraine with food. She's out there to try to stop them from being invaded from Russia. She's got a little bit of a different agenda than we do. But hey, if you're there, grab a bratwurst. You might as well, Senator, you'll enjoy that. Anyway, Max Nesterak is going to chat with Brett Johnson from AM 950 about those issues right here.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson with you here on a Tuesday afternoon. Well, right now we're joined by Max Nesterak. He is the deputy editor of the Minnesota Reformer. Of course, the website minnesotareformer.com for the latest in Minnesota news and politics, as they do a great job over there. As today we're going to be talking about a few topics, but mainly what's happening with Minnesota hospitals, as they are set to receive about $40 million in federal aid, thanks to an action taken by Governor Tim Walz. But we're going to be talking much more about that, as well as some vaccine requirements in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and Amy Klobuchar going to Ukraine this week. So lots to cover today, so let's bring Max in. Hey, Max, thanks for joining me on the show today. Appreciate it.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So as I said in the open, Minnesota hospitals are set to receive about $40 million in federal aid to boost staffing levels. So how exactly is this money going to be spent, if you can talk about that $40
million? Sure. So Governor Walz and his health commissioner, Jan Malcolm, announced this funding last week, and the funding will come from federal American Rescue Plan dollars, and they hope they could hire about 350 healthcare workers, mostly nurses, for the 2 months. So people working 60 hours a week for the next 60 days. It's unclear where they're going to find these nurses because there's a nursing shortage, dire nursing shortage across the country. But Commissioner Malcolm said they were in negotiations with a national firm that could bring in those workers. So we're waiting and seeing.
Yeah, as you said, that's going to be the challenge, is finding those actual workers, because as you wrote in your piece, there's some pretty big numbers of healthcare workers that are missing from a number of hospitals, if you can talk about those a little bit.
Right. You know, my jaw was on the floor at this news conference when we had the head of CentraCare, who said more than 800 of their 12,000 employees are out sick with COVID-19. And there were 20,000 open shifts over the past year. They operate 6 hospitals and dozens of clinics across central Minnesota. And the health partners, another one of the largest healthcare providers in the state, said they had more than 1,000 of their 26,000 workers out sick with COVID-19. So really staggering numbers. And it's not just the highly contagious Omicron variant that's causing staff shortages. Of course, you know, we've all heard of the Great Resignation, and healthcare has not been immune to that. So lots of attrition in the healthcare industry and people just out sick.
So when we do eventually get these healthcare workers hired, how do we decide which hospitals they get placed? Since, well, it's pretty much all over Minnesota where hospitals are experiencing shortages, not just in urban or rural areas. So talk about that aspect a little bit.
Right. This is a question journalists put to Commissioner Malcolm, and she said they're still working with their partners to develop, you know, how to decide where to send the nurses, but they'll be focusing on tertiary hospitals, you know, hospitals that have a highly specialized units that are already receiving referrals from smaller hospitals across the state. So you could probably expect a sizable portion of these healthcare workers to go to those large hospitals that can treat the sickest of patients.
Again, we're speaking with Max Nesterak. He's the deputy editor of the Minnesota Reformer website, minnesotareformer.com, for the latest in Minnesota news and politics. Now, there are some other actions that the Walz administration is going to be taking besides just trying to hire more healthcare workers at hospitals around the state. Can you talk about what some of these other executive actions that the Walz administration is doing and kind of how they would be impacting us here in Minnesota?
Right. So one of the things that they would do is waiving the fees for adding new beds in hospitals. So this is something I didn't know about, that, you know, hospitals have to pay a licensing fee for every bed that it has. So it's waiving additional fees for those at hospitals and nursing homes. So that so if there's capacity, if there's space, there's less friction there of bringing those beds online. They also said they're going to be reducing the normal waiting period for some nursing home patients to be transferred. So these things should help. Republicans have called to take even greater action and to adopt, to call a special session and adopt a bill that would allow nurses who are licensed in other states to more easily work in Minnesota. I'll note that Minnesota already does permit nurses with licenses from our neighbors in Wisconsin, Iowa, North Dakota, and South Dakota to practice in the state with minimum barriers. You know, but Walz is unlikely to call a special session for that. There's been fears that, you know, once they get into a special session, Republicans are going to axe his health commissioner, who has not been confirmed by the Senate yet.
Let's talk a little bit more about these Republican proposals, as you were talking specifically with Senate Majority Leader Jeremy Miller proposing this idea that we could bring in some nurses from out of state. But as you said, there are certainly some political considerations to make with calling a special session ahead of the regular session. What was the response from the Walz administration in terms of this idea of having some of these healthcare workers come from out of state? Is he open to the idea, but a little hesitant to do it, being that, well, there's a chance that Commissioner Malcolm could be fired if he calls a special session? What has been their general thought on trying to do that?
You know, the Walz administration is, like I said, unlikely to call a special session. And the regular session starts in just a couple weeks here on January 31st. You know, Walz said he would review the proposal. It faces resistance from the nurses union, who are a key backer of Walz. And Walz, you know, needled Republicans by saying thank you for finally coming to the table, after he said he had submitted his proposals to ease the shortage, you know, months ago. So there's some political bickering going on, and they'll be forced to, you know, confront each other and deal with some of these issues when they are back in session in a couple weeks.
Well, another part that I know Republicans have been highlighting here in Minnesota has to do with a potential vaccine mandate in the state, which, by the way, has not been proposed by anybody. But at the end of the piece you wrote in the Minnesota Reformer, again, website minnesotareformer.com, you brought up when you heard from CentraCare that it's not really the vaccine mandate for healthcare workers that's been causing staff shortages. So I found that quote interesting because that's something that Republicans have certainly been focusing on.
Yeah, and to be clear, it's not that no workers have left because of the vaccine mandate. They've certainly been, scores of workers, healthcare workers across the state who have left because they don't want to get vaccinated. And so I put that question to the leaders of CentraCare and health partners. They said, the leader of CentraCare said he had 120 workers who were put on leave because of the requirement that they get vaccinated. Again, that's out of 12,000 employees. And since those workers were put on leave, about 40 decided to get vaccinated and come back. At Health Partners, it was about 120 workers also who were put on leave, and about half of whom chose to get vaccinated and return to work. So, there are certainly workers who do not want to get vaccinated and are staying home, but it's not – the leaders of these two hospitals said that's not – what's really driving the shortage of workers. And I'll just note the Supreme Court struck down Biden's requirement that private employers have a vax or test mandate, but it allowed the one for healthcare workers to stand. So, healthcare workers across the country are going to be subjected to a vax, get vaccinated or get tested regularly kind of mandate.
Speaking with Max Nesterak, he's the deputy editor of the Minnesota Reformer, website minnesotareformer.com. I want to briefly touch on two more important news stories, and one has to do with what's happening in Minneapolis and St. Paul since a vaccine mandate is going to be put in place starting tomorrow. That would impact people who are going to places like bars, restaurants, or movie theaters. Can you talk a little bit about what exactly these vaccine rules are in Minneapolis and St. Paul and what both Mayor Melvin Carter and Mayor Jacob Fry were talking about in terms of what they're expecting these mandates to do and kind of how they're going to help and what rules people will need to follow when they enter these venues?
Sure. So Minneapolis and St. Paul announced this requirement at a joint press conference, and they go into effect tomorrow. Customers will need to show a proof of vaccination or a negative COVID test within 72 hours. In order to enter bars, restaurants, or anywhere where beverages are sold. You can use either your CDC vaccination card or a picture of your vaccination card, or if you use one of a variety of apps that they have, you can use that as well. Otherwise, as for testing, if you need to present a negative test, it needs to be it can't be an at-home test result. You can't just bring the strip with one blue stripe and no pink stripe. You need a printout from a health a professional COVID testing vaccination site or testing site in order to enter. People who will be exempt from the rule are children younger than five because they're not eligible yet for the vaccines and they won't need a test.
And another question on this, but how exactly is this going to be enforced in Minneapolis and St. Paul? Did we get any direction from the Melvin Carter or Jacob Fry administration? Is this largely going to be left up to the businesses to enforce the mandate? Talk about that aspect a little bit.
Right. Yeah, it's up to the businesses to enforce it. And this is something that some employees have, are concerned about. They don't want to have to ask for vaccination cards. Obviously a highly charged political issue in a highly charged political environment. And so, frontline employees who, are working for tips really don't want to bring up something that could be an uncomfortable topic. But, I'll just note that other Twin Cities businesses have been requiring patrons to show their vaccination cards for months, First Avenue, the Guthrie, Fair State Brewing, other restaurants, have all already implemented a vaccination requirement. So we'll see how it plays out starting tomorrow.
All right, Max, final topic for you, and that has to do with Senator Amy Klobuchar, as she went to Ukraine this week to meet with the president of Ukraine in the midst of Russian aggression. Klobuchar is there with a bipartisan delegation. So talk about what's happening in Ukraine with Klobuchar meeting with the president and who's in this bipartisan delegation and what we can expect from it.
Right. So Klobuchar traveled to Ukraine on Monday, yesterday, with six of her colleagues from Connecticut, North Dakota, New Hampshire, Missouri, and elsewhere. And they met with President Zelensky, and they held a press conference to basically say, you know, America stands with Ukraine in the face of Russian aggression. You know, Ukraine, to remind listeners, is worried about an invasion from Russia. Russia already annexed Crimea. And, you know, the tensions between the two countries are really reaching an all-time high. And so not only did Klobuchar tell, you know, Ukrainian people that America stands with them, she co-sponsored a legislation that would impose sanctions on Russia if it acts against Ukraine. And they would also, and it would also authorize about $500 million in emergency security assistance to Ukraine if Russia invades. So, you know, Klobuchar's message was, you have friends in the United States.
We have been speaking with Max Nesterak. He is the deputy editor of the Minnesota Reformer, website minnesotareformer.com, for the latest in Minnesota news and politics. They do a tremendous job of independent reporting over there, so highly encourage you to sign up for their newsletter over at minnesotareformer.com, and of course, check the website for the latest news as well. You can also follow Max, who we've been speaking with, on Twitter, at Max Nesterak. Max, thanks so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, let's take a break and send things back over to Matt McNeil up next on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Thanks to Max Nesterak. Thank you very much. Top-notch interview there with Brett Johnson. If you didn't miss it, we do video the show. I never got into radio to do video. I'm just going to let you know. Back in my day, we were allowed to be trolls by ourselves in the studios. But hey, you get a watch, and I know you like to watch. You can watch the show if you do so like. It's over on Facebook on the AM 950 radio page, as well as Progressive Citizen X Matt McNeil Show. I showed some photos of little Claiborne when he was a little pup, 15 years. This is 2007. This is actually 3 days before my youngest child was born back then. And very cute pictures. They say when you have kids, you have a friend that tells you, you know what? Blink and they're old. Blink and they're gone. Absolutely. It seems like it was yesterday. Those kids were that young. And now one's at college. Another one getting ready to go to college. The other one, maybe tech school. A lot of people go right into the work field. She's actually could be the smartest. The third could be the smartest of them all. That's dead truthful, too. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Tuesday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota. Let's get into the Minnesota coronavirus update for today. The COVID update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 10,659 newly reported cases, 29 newly reported deaths. The state's COVID now is 11,000 even. Yikes. Today's report includes the data that was reported in the 24-hour period ending at 4 a.m. on Friday. Due to the holiday for MLK, data from 4 a.m. Friday through 4 a.m. Tuesday will be released in Wednesday's report. So tomorrow, expect a very high series of numbers. Minnesota's test positivity rate on a 7-day rolling average through January 7th was 22.2%, which is another record high in Minnesota. Anything over 10% puts Minnesota at the high-risk threshold for community transmission of the coronavirus. Through January 17th, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 1,610. That's down from 1,616 reported on January 14th. Of those hospitalized, 248 people are in intensive care, down from 260. That is 1,362 are in non-ICU care. That's up from 1,356. The latest hospital capacity data shows there are 36 staffed ICU beds available in the entire state. That's up from 23 on January 14th. 15 pediatric ICU beds available, which is up from January 14th. Before I went out on my little COVID leave, we were talking about that the Omicron variant doesn't seem to be hitting the ICUs as seriously, but man, a lot of people getting in the hospital. That's what you're seeing. As of January 13th, the state reported that 3,799,301 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. 3,563,082 people have completed the vaccine series. Nicely done. The state has administered 1,900,456 third dose booster shots. I want to say I don't mind being the freaking poster child for this. Get vaccinated. Get your booster shot. I got COVID. 5 days later, I tested negative. I was asymptomatical, maybe a little bit of a running nose, but I never lost my, and knock on wood, never lost my sense of taste and sense of smell. Didn't have a hacking cough. Couldn't get out of bed. Didn't have a burning temperature. I feel very grateful. Very, very grateful. And I talked to my doctor today, and he said, without a doubt, the reason why you weathered this storm is because of the vaccine and the booster shot. And I'm dead serious when I say this. Omicron booster comes on out. I've probably had the Omicron variant here. You think for 1 second I'm not going to get the booster? You're crazy. Of course I'm going to get it. Of course I'm going to get it. You think I got my new N95 mask here? Very, very chic, if I might say so. Oh, and you can store a candy bar in there, and you actually can, delicious. I got that ready to go. No, I'm not eating candy bars in my N95 mask. Although, I think I've come up with a marketing idea. I'm going to be social distancing. I'm going to be careful. Just because I've got it, and just because I've got immunity, doesn't mean I have any less responsibility to society to be careful. And I'm going to, if I have to lead by example, I have to lead by example. In the same sense as, trust me, your example when you're unvaccinated, I just had a friend tell me they had neighbors came over and at no point told them that they were unvaccinated and at no point told them as they're hanging around with them, oh yeah, COVID's running rampant in my family. And like a week after they saw them, their dad died. Well, guess what happened? Some of the members of the family got COVID. I see your idea of what leadership is. Dear Lord. God, yes, you have a response. You don't want to be vaccinated. That's fine. But then you have a responsibility to the rest of the to A, be straightforward with everyone about the fact you're not vaccinated, especially if you've got COVID running through your family. How petty, small, selfish, childish, dear Lord. Dear Lord, you've got to let people know this. You don't want to get vaccinated, that's fine, and that's your choice. I'm not you. You have the right to make that choice, but then you have a responsibility to everyone else to not only for your own safety and security, but for everyone else's as well. The least you can do, and I do mean the absolute freaking least you can do. 1,148,888 people have gotten COVID in the state of Minnesota, and I'm one of them. Students at St. Paul Public Schools are planning to walk out on Tuesday in protest of the district's COVID-19 response. The students released a list of demands, and they plan to walk out at 1 p.m. to show the district there needs to be a cohesive COVID plan, according to change.org petition that is more than 1,300 signatures. Dear God, can I just tell you right now, this class, these kids that are coming up now, they are tired of our absolute lack of cohesive policies. They are tired of it, and they are not going to take it anymore. They are just not. It's Generation Z. They are tired of this. I brought up yesterday, and I don't blame them. I don't blame I brought up yesterday the Lakeville public school system, where they're like, all right, we're going to let you only know once a week if your kid's been exposed to COVID. What? So you could have a kid that's exposed to COVID and you're not going to, on a Monday, and you're not going to let them know until a Friday or whatever you, whenever you lead those emails out. You're not going to even allow a kid who doesn't want to be in a freaking Petri dish, which pretty much every public school that's in session right now is, and every school is for that matter. Oh, I know you, the charter school and private school people are smug about, well, our kids are still in school. Yeah, your kids are in a little Petri dish. That's what they're in. Don't come complaining to us when all of a sudden your kid comes home sick. You guys have gone out, you guys are out there making policies which are jeopardizing these kids without, and you think you're foolish enough to that the kids aren't noticing this. I had a friend whose kid came into them and was like, I guess I better go get COVID now. Just this depressed child having to go to school. You know, you guys think to yourselves that you can make these policies and that the kids are not noticing. The kids see exactly what you're doing, and they are tired of your crap. Like I said yesterday, and I had a nice little speech yesterday in the 4 o'clock hour where I talked about the fact that we as a society have determined that mild inconvenience is by far more important than unnecessary suffering. That is a sad statement about where we are at. Well, we don't want to inconvenience anyone. Oh, so by not inconveniencing people, you are acknowledging or sickening people, and you are likely killing people. And that doesn't matter. The death of someone, the sickness of these people, it doesn't matter because your main goal is to make sure people are not mildly inconvenienced. And I'm not saying that there aren't sacrifices that need to be made, and I'm not saying that this doesn't suck on about 80 different levels. But at the end of the day, we used to say making sure people don't get sick and making sure people don't die should be our priority. And today it's like, you're saying I can't be there for the 5 o'clock $1 Rails rinks? How dare you inconvenience me? Screw you all of you. We need to do a much better job at caring for ourselves. And these kids are just lashing out because adults that don't have the guts or the sensibility to make the right decisions. And they are tired of your crap. Dear Lord. Outstanding, by the way, kids in St. Paul. Students feel uncomfortable in the schools because the St. Paul Public Schools' failure to follow health guidelines and keep the St. Paul Public School students and their families safe, the petition says. According to the St. Paul Public Schools COVID dashboard, during the month of January, 1,717 students and 689 staff tested positive. Wow. That's the month of January. We're not even done with January. We're barely halfway done with January, and you got 1,717 sick kids. And 689 sick staff. Dear Lord. The students' petition says they've created a list of demands and hope for the environment of which the St. Paul Public Schools will work with St. Paul Public School students and honor our requests and concerns. We want to continue to learn. We hope that St. Paul Public Schools will do it in a safe way for students and families, the petition adds. The demands include switching to distance learning for 2 weeks, like other districts in the state have done, until the Omicron variant is under control. Provide KN95 masks for students and staff. Provide PCR tests for staff and students. Create an online learning, hybrid learning option. Continue contact tracing. Protect staff by supporting the St. Paul FE Union and working the union's request. Dear Lord, how are the most adult-sounding people in the school district the students? Seriously. Outstanding. And by the way, can I just make this comment to the St. Paul Public Schools when they sit there and it's like, aren't we proud of the leaders we created? Dude, they're doing this to spite you, not because you inspired them. This leadership is emerging because of the lack of leadership by the adults. Like I said, students, out freaking standing. And by the way, a story from Bringing the News, related because Care 11 had it a little bit later on. On Tuesday, students from across the St. Paul Public Schools walked out of their classes to protest how the district is handling the latest COVID-19 outbreak. At 1 p.m., students walked in from all eight district high schools, and some middle schools participated in the walkout. Nicely done. Way to bring attention to a absolutely unacceptable standard. I mean, in the Lakeville Public Schools, they made the thing as like, well, you better not go to distance learning for 2 weeks because COVID's still going to be around in 2 weeks. Then shut the schools down for four. God, you senseless, arrogant fools. What's wrong with you? I mean, think about this. Well, you know, there are mad lunatics running around right now, but we better not basically let you go and learn from home because in 2 weeks, the mad lunatics are still going to be running around. So, yeah, there's no point, huh? We're not even going to try to save you. See? God. Do any of you freaking adults see the kind of the disgusting policies you're putting out there? You have made mild inconvenience the biggest concern, not trying to prevent needless suffering. And Lakeville schools, I'll call you out once again specifically. You're killing people. Do you understand that? You're making kids sick by making them be in school. Those kids are going to get sick, and they're going to bring it home, and their families are going to get sick. And I guarantee you there's a family member that's going to die. Please. You're basically just telling people, move from the district because you can't trust us to watch your kids. And in St. Paul, you're not doing much better job, if I may be honest. If the kids are at this point where they're like, I'm walking out, well, what does it tell you about your leadership? Well, Matt, the tests are going to be expensive. The tests are going to be less. Start by going to remote learning, for God's sakes. And I'll be the first to say, yeah, it sucks. But if it saves one kid, it saves one family member, if, for God's sakes, if it prevents one kid from getting sick, we used to think that that was a successful ratio. Now, 300, 400. What was those numbers again? What are those numbers again for January alone? 1,717 sick kids. Ah, the heck with them. Get in here. We need to do another cuddle hug. Jesus. 689 staff members. That the needless suffering of 1,717 people is not enough for you to say, dear Lord, look in the freaking mirror. Dear Lord, what are we doing? Let's go to remote learning. Yeah, it's not the best, but hey, if we can stop the needless suffering of 1,717 students. God, the kids are furious with you because you look like you're serving them up on a platter for COVID. Dear Lord. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Tell you what, let's take a break now. Come on back. More COVID stuff coming up. I Am Awake, the Native Roots Radio folks, they are coming up here in the 6 o'clock hour. Of course, Robert Pilot, Wendy, Ogama, make sure you're sitting tight, staying with us right through the evening, right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. By the way, the government has started up their covidtest.gov website. I actually signed up, Patrick. I got the 4 free tests coming my way. It's interesting. You click on the button, and it's covidtest.gov. That's plural. Covidtest, T-E-S-T-S.gov. You click on the link, and it takes you to the United States Postal Service, and you just enter in your address there, and they'll send you... You know, some eventually they'll get here, but I mean, I'm going to get my 4 free. Get your 4 free, Matt.
Sounds easy. Everybody should sign up, get their 4 free tests.
It's your government working for you. Thank you, Joe Biden. Thank you very much. All you have to do is click the order free at home test. Once again, you get routed to the USPS. They'll start shipping in late January. No problem. Just get them here. I'm happy with that. The St. Paul Winter Carnival. I do love the St. Paul Winter Carnival, although I'm wondering, can you have Klondike Kate give me a call? Love her. Love her. The organizers have a message for anyone planning to attend. please be vaccinated against COVID. Now, I want to make sure I understand. They're not putting out any mandates, which, let's face it, that means a jerk is going to come out and say, there's no mandate. I can come out here and cough on everybody. Ha, ha, ha. The St. Paul Festival and Heritage Foundation announced new COVID guidelines on Sunday for the January 28th through February 6th winter celebration. While the foundation is not mandating vaccinations for its events, it's urging everyone taking part to take precautions. We strongly encourage any individual participating in the St. Paul Winter Carnival to be fully vaccinated or take a COVID test within 72 hours of participating, said the Winter Carnival website. If you have existing health issues or immune compromised or are simply worried about contracting COVID, consider avoiding these activities and events this year. Anyone planning to stop by one of the indoor venues, particularly in a quick bite or something to drink, you have to follow the city's emergency regulations. In licensed businesses, a face mask is required for social distancing can't be maintained. Starting on Wednesday, any licensed business that serves food or drink indoors will be required to make patrons show proof of COVID vaccinations. So you got to follow those rules. But the outdoor stuff, they can't really put that into place. The foundation also issued, I love you guys, St. Paul Winter Carnival, you guys are awesome. The foundation also issued a general reminder to, in essence, not be a jerk about any of the rules. Hey, welcome to St. Paul. Don't be a jackass. Okay, that's it. Can we put that on? That's your new city motto. Hey, welcome to St. Paul. Don't be a jackass. Beautiful. Mwah. I love you. I'm going to be out there for a few days. I love the Winter Carnival. Now in the 136th freaking year. How many events have been going on that long? Unbelievable. It begins once again January 28th. Go out there and enjoy it. Love you, St. Paul. A few notes from the university system here on COVID and the COVID update. First of all, the Wednesday scheduled Big Ten matchup between the Gophers and Penn State has been postponed. The Gophers announced Tuesday the game is postponed due to internal COVID-19 protocols within the Gopher program. Minnesota's roster is already limited to Sunday's loss to Iowa. The Gophers were down 4 players due to injury, illness, and COVID protocols. The Penn State game is called off by Minnesota, fell below the Big Ten's roster minimums. The team needs to have at least 7 scholarship players available for a game to continue as scheduled. Minnesota fell below that limit. Gosh, COVID's just getting them. Right now, the Gophers game in Rutgers is still scheduled. That's for Saturday. Unknown if they'll be able to make up that game. I imagine they're going to try to, that's for sure. University of Minnesota students returned to campus and classrooms Tuesday amid spiking COVID-19 case counts. The start of the semester brings tens of thousands of students, faculty, and staff to the Dinkytown East Bank neighborhoods. Colleges have been seen as incubators of COVID-19 throughout the pandemic. Some are worried the start of the semester will fuel even more outbreaks. Last week, the students trickled back into campus. The test positivity rate for tests taken at the U spiked to 23%. Some colleges and universities elsewhere have delayed the semester, temporarily switched to online classes as well. University leaders are pointing to students to expanded resources for booster shots, tests, and free high-quality masks. The vaccination mandate and indoor mask requirements for community spaces remains in effect as well. You want to tell the basketball team? I don't mean to say this, but clearly... Guys, stop licking each other or whatever you guys are doing over there. You guys are getting COVID all over the place. Just stay in your rooms for a little bit. Or, you know, it's a big basketball court. Do you all have to, take shots from the same spot? I'd hope not. Just be careful out there. Finally here, have you ever been, Patrick, you've been out to the fine institution, Al's Breakfast over there in Dinkytown?
I'm not going to get a seat in there. And I'm sorry, breakfast is just not my jam.
You're fired. No, I'm sorry. I love breakfast. As a matter of fact, the last time I think I was there, I grabbed breakfast with Brianna Biersbach, who's now at the Star Tribune. Fantastic place. It's a great place. I enjoy going out there. It's unfortunately, saying the obvious, it's not the most COVID-safe spot, and it knows that there's a tiny space that only has 13 seats, which are open and always occupied. The beloved Dinkytown Institution reopened this summer, signage out in the front announcing that vaccination was required if you wanted to eat there. But now that Omicron is raging in Minnesota, Al's has gone to close due to vaccinated staffers catching it. Some anti-vaxxer is taking the moment to gloat about the news, sending a stupid note to the diner via snail mail, which Al's share on Facebook. It's so interesting. Your support talks about human rights and how no human is legal, but you feel compelled, completely justified in discriminating against people who choose to exercise the right of their own medical freedoms, complains the person. Dude, if you're trying to say you can jeopardize everyone else, you moron, why don't you send me a letter, you idiot? God, I'd love to see how stupid you really are. That is just dumb. He's upset because they can't get Al's baller pancakes anymore. It's not too late. It's okay to admit you're wrong. Be on the right side of history. And that's what this guy writes. Dude, Al's, first of all, you're brilliant. Love you. Love your breakfast. Just ignore Patrick. I love your breakfast. It's fantastic. I've enjoyed it a few times. Dude, you're doing the right thing because Omicron is a bear. This moron, I'm sorry, I'm going to guess your parents didn't love you or something like that. That's what I'm going to guess. But go be a loser somewhere else, jackass. Well, that means St. Paul's out. Talk to you later. Till tomorrow. See ya.